Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is another hour here of the show. We will get Felix Johnson in to talk about all these NFL storylines coming up in just a little bit. So be ready for that. We've got conversations about the Memphis Tigers and their efforts to join the Big 12 and some other stories around the sports world. Of course, probably a little more Royals talk. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, WCBC Delano's debut brew, Hatfield's Mama, German Kolsch with a clean, crisp character that's smooth and refreshing. Make history with Hatfield's Mama, Wichita Brewing Company, Delano's debut brew, available at all three WBC brew pubs. We get you back in here. Tommy, just finding out here, Crestview Country Club is a great supporter of the show. Just finding out that the tennis team for Crestview that my wife is on is making a regional tournament in Oklahoma City. We told you about the swim team and their big success. So, and I bring this up just for people, when you give them a call and you check it out, it's great golf. Everybody knows that. But there you go. Her tennis crew, I think she just sent us the message, made the regional tournament. So they're going to go play. And that's been one of the great hobbies for her and a lot of people, all our teammates. They're all just people that have kind of found their way back to it. So it is more than golf. It's tennis. It's swimming if your kids are into it. It's a great bar and a great restaurant too. Have you been? I know they just changed their menu. Have you been since they changed their menu?
No, I've not. But everything I've had recently has been really good.
Yeah, they just changed it, I think, like in the last week, like a total menu overhaul. Looking forward to getting in there and trying that out as well. All right, Tommy, let's poke a little fun at the Memphis Tigers here. The story yesterday is that Memphis was trying to secure, and maybe did, between $200 and $250 million through sponsorship commitments as a part of a bid to join the Big 12. Memphis has been rumored to the Big 12 for a long time. Would make sense. But I think the ship has sailed, and I don't know why they were not included in the initial rounds of expansion in a school like Cincinnati or UCF was. Memphis is a good sized market in a part of the country the Big 12 doesn't particularly serve. Maybe that's a part of it. They don't feel like that's a market they can really break into much with the SEC. But Memphis clearly tried hard to get in, and the Big 12 just, they don't want them. I get it, because the problem for Memphis is what, and the problem for any team doing this now, that ship sailed, because what does Memphis football add to the Big 12 is the question that you have to ask. And it's a question you very easily could have asked for a lot of teams with the last round of expansion. But now, especially, like if you are not coming in, and this is why it was an interesting play by Memphis to come in and try and like tie all these sponsorships and everything to it. But if you're not bringing significant money to the table, as far as what you add on to like a potential TV contract or something, man, what are you even doing? You know, like it just doesn't make any sense to add teams right now.
Yeah. I mean, it really doesn't. And, you know, I think all along, the Big 12 has really kept its eyes on the ACC and what the ACC will do after their media deal is up. And is there an opportunity for the Big 12 to get stronger through some of those schools down the road? Right now, there's really no movement in any kind of realignment or anything like that. And so I can see the Big 12, you know, getting that offer from Memphis and saying, I mean, yeah, the money's nice, I guess, but that doesn't really raise our profile at all. It doesn't really make us stronger in the whole scheme of things. It gives us an odd number of teams in our conference. We go from 16 to 17, outside of just the upfront money that you're willing to give us and the fact that you're willing to abstain from getting any kind of money distribution from the networks for a while. What's the value? What's the advantage for the Big 12 to take that? So it doesn't really surprise me one bit that the Big 12 is like, yeah, we're we're good for right now. We're going to stand pat. We're not going to do anything. And we're going to wait and see what happens down the road.
You have to, you just like, you have to look at what does it do long term, right? And when they go to the table, when they go to the negotiating room, I cannot imagine Memphis drives up the value of that deal, which means that deal is watered down now by Memphis. So, you know, if you're Kansas State or you're Kansas and you're looking at this and you're like, okay, let's look at them as a potential member. This isn't even a knock on Memphis. Memphis has great programs. Memphis does a lot. They're just too late to this. Because if you're with ESPN and you're laying out the path to why you think this is a great deal and why they should sign this lucrative, Memphis isn't moving the needle. And if they're not moving the needle, that means now you have to pay one more team and you make less money. It's the schools that would have to decide to take them, right? So when we have these conversations and we're having them about, let's say, Florida State or Miami or North Carolina, those are needle movers. Memphis football is not a needle mover. And the disadvantage, the reason the Big 12 would add UConn or Gonzaga or whatever, is because they're not going to take money away in the grand scheme because they don't play football. Or in UConn's case, they don't play relevant football. I don't even know how their football deal works. But those could be additions. It's not like you can just take Memphis basketball only, or maybe you can down the road. I don't know. But that's the challenge for Memphis, is it's almost like now the football program is going to hold you back. And this is, you know, this is the thing that makes all of this interesting. The Big 12 can get their basketball conference better, but they're going to have to break away basketball. Now, if they do that, maybe there's room for a team like Memphis. Maybe Memphis plays football in the American and basketball. But all of this is really good news for Wichita State. Wichita State needs Memphis to be alongside them in the American.
Yeah, I'll be completely honest. I'm not a Memphis fan, but is Memphis deserving of a better conference than the American? Probably. I would say yes.
Maybe.
I would say yes, they are.
I mean, if Cincinnati is, then correct. Memphis probably is.
If UCF is, then yes. I think Houston is in a completely different tier than any of those schools I just mentioned. But, I mean, should Memphis be in a Power Four conference? Probably. But they missed the boat. They missed the boat in getting in and figuring out a way to make this happen. Now, could the Pac-12 in this new-look Pac-12 try to make, you know, a play to bring in Memphis? I guess. Would that be a benefit to Memphis, or would it be better for them to just stay with the American for now? I don't know. I guess it depends on what the cost is for them to leave the American. I did think it was funny, though, that this happened on the same day as the rebrand for the American. And so you've got all of the member schools for the American tweeting out, like, we're stronger together. And like, Memphis did the same thing. And you're like, yeah, but you won out. You don't want to. It's very clear and very public that you don't want to be in this conference anymore.
I mean, there's no risk to Memphis. What's the American going to do? Oh, you want out right. So bad, we'll let you out. No. They're like, hey, we love you, Memphis. We're right here for you. No, they need Memphis. The American needs Memphis. Again, I tell people all the time, like, when Wichita State made the move, and you were talking about UConn and Houston and Cincinnati and Memphis, what a great couple of years that was. A great league. Great league. It was a blast. And it just, you know, it just didn't hold.
But you know what? I do also think, it to your point, when you bring up Wichita State, this bears watching in the years to come as far as how it impacts Wichita State. Because if Memphis ultimately leaves at some point, if they get overtures from the Pac-12 or in the next round of conference realignment, Memphis is on its way out, then at that point, it's a much, much, much weakened American conference compared to what it was when the Shockers entered it. So it does bear watching, I would say, for long-term what ends up happening with the Tigers.
There's no question. There's no question. I think the American... The problem is this all revolves around football, and so it gets really hard to find Wichita State's place in it. But Wichita State's place in that basketball league, if Wichita State is doing what it should be doing, is probably in an elevated spot, but that's the way Memphis feels right now. I mean, if you're just talking about basketball, they feel that way right now. They're the cream of the crop in this league, and Wichita State should be, and hopefully will be, right back up there with them. But they should be banner carrying this league every year. I think Wichita State would have places to go if it ever got to like critical mass. But even without Memphis, Wichita State isn't that unaligned with teams in the American. I mean, it wouldn't be the worst. It would just, I mean, it's a one bid league anyway, basically. So I don't even know how much would change right now if something like that happened. But I hope it doesn't. I hope Memphis stays in the American. I hope the American at some point when craziness happens, I think one more time, maybe they can get stronger. Maybe they can add teams, right? If the ACC ultimately goes away and that's the way this goes, there are probably going to be a handful of teams that would add to the league. And the American's been historically aggressive. So, you know, we'll see. But that story was out there, obviously has an impact on Wichita State. When we come back, let's talk some football. Felix Johnson's coming in. And we got a lot to get to with Felix, both with the Chiefs and around the league. That's next on Sports Day.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. We are joined now by Felix Johnson. You'll find him at Felix R. Johnson on X, writing for Arrowhead Addict, putting out content for a lot of different places. And here we go, Felix, because it has been, let's start with the Chiefs. You are our Chiefs insider first. It's been eventful between Rashee Rice and George Karlaftis and Trey Smith and, you know, this slow off season has sped up to a fever pitch here. Juwan Taylor's injured. Where do you even begin? I think you begin with Rashee Rice. How much do you think? Well, I guess first things first, how many games do you think he's going to get? I saw reports of 2 to 4. I think it's going to be more than that. I think it'll be 6, probably, maybe whatever it ends up being. But what do you think? What do you think the game total is? And is this weirdly the best timing for the Chiefs as he continues to come back from that injury?
And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. I think that that could be the case where, like, if he, and it does seem like Rashee Rice is ahead of schedule or right on schedule with his knee rehab. So that doesn't seem to be a problem. So, like, this would be something like a setback that might be a small blessing if you thought about it like that. But like you're saying, I don't think it's going to be between 2 and 4. I think it's more likely between 4 and 6, probably that first month of the season or so, which does suck for Kansas City because that's probably the hardest part of their schedule. They have to start the season in Brazil against the Chargers. They have week 2 against the Eagles, and it just goes on like that just because it's the Kansas City Chiefs, and they already have the target on their back after these last few years just because they are who they are. So it does suck, and when you think about it from a football perspective, it's we're expecting the light show to return immediately, and it still has a chance to be there just because Xavier Worthy is in his second year. You have Hollywood Brown coming back from his injury last year, and Isaiah Pacheco back from his lengthy injury last year. So you can, and Patrick Mahomes is still there, and Travis Kelce still has something left in the tank. So you expect, or it could be a lot like what it was last year, and even then, Kansas City started the season, or the last undefeated team left in the league. So it could be all of these different ranges of situations, and even after 6 games of Rashee Rice being suspended, the Chiefs might be 4-2 or 5-1, and then getting a receiver, so you might be in a good situation with that. But obviously, if he's going to get the punishment deserved and probably more.
Since the last time we talked to you last week, Felix, the Chiefs have given out 2 big extensions. Trey Smith, obviously, got the deal done right before the deadline with the Chiefs last week. And then we find out George Karlaftis gets re-signed as well for Kansas City. You know, Brett Veach has always been a master at figuring out how to work around the salary restrictions and everything to get things done and to extend players that they want to see in Kansas City long term. Let's start with the Trey Smith deal. Were you surprised that they were able to get one done before the deadline? I know last week when we talked, it was kind of up in the air if they would even get it completed.
Yeah, I think I was a little shocked that it was before the deadline, and that just because we kind of talked about it, it's kind of hard to pay 4 out of your 5 offensive linemen, and none of them are your left tackle. And they had already moved off of Joe Tooney, so it was even harder to say, yeah, let's go ahead and move off of your other guard just a year later or whatever the case, a year and a half later or whatever the case may have been. So it does make sense on that front. But I think about it, like, and I think we mentioned this last week when Kansas City is practicing good on good, who do they have to go up against? Chris Jones. How do you stop him? You have a really good guard or 2 guards in center, and that's what Kansas City has. And that's where the league is kind of moving in general, where the interior defensive lines are a little bit stronger. Milton Williams got a massive deal with New England this offseason. So we're seeing different things start to trend that way. So it makes sense that you would have to have a guard be paid like that. And so and obviously as an offensive lineman, you want to see an interior offensive lineman at that. You want to see guys like that get paid because that job is really hard because you're banging around a little bit more than a tackle. And obviously Trey Smith is a pancake machine. So it is impressive to see that get done, especially we talk about Kansas City, everything that they have done and trying to continue it. This is part of continuing it because Patrick Mahomes isn't 30 yet. You got to have that protection to keep him upright for the years to come.
Okay. Speaking of protection, Felix Jones joining us, Arrowhead Addict, when we talk Chiefs. Juwan Taylor's out for a little while. We don't know how long exactly. We've talked about his role. I think sometimes we're maybe a little harsh on him. He's average. He's just expensive average. But do you think the reps gained here for the 2 guys we wonder about at left tackle potentially, Moore, Simmons, could this pay off for them? And how quick a trigger, like if those two are balling out, how quick a trigger do you think the Chiefs might have to make one of them their right tackle and Juwan Taylor be a swing tackle?
It would depend on, and again, I know that this shouldn't matter to like true football fans, but like, what does that cap number look like? Because the worst thing you can be is average, expensive, and on the bench. And even like as important as a swing tackle position is, you shouldn't be getting paid $80 million over 5 years to do that. And you can't be doing that if you're Kansas City, and they'd probably move off of Juwan Taylor if that was the case. But we just recorded a podcast yesterday that'll be coming out next week with Nate Taylor of ESPN Now, talking all things AFC West. And he said the number one out of all of the things that we can talk about with the Kansas City Chiefs, still don't know who the left tackle is. And so, like, obviously any type of reps at any type of tackle spot is awesome for a Jalen Moore who sat behind Trent Williams for the first 5 years of his career, whatever it was. You have a rookie in Kingsley, or a second-year player in Kingsley Suamataia, who might be able to fit into a role just in case, because you never know with injuries what might be there. And then obviously Josh Simmons, he's coming off an ACL tear. Fingers are crossed all over Kansas City and everywhere else. So hopefully he can work into some reps and be consistent as often as possible. So they have a lot of options there. Even with Juwan Taylor out, it does make things a little bit more interesting. But even then, there's still plenty of question marks around the position.
With Trey Smith getting re-signed, with George Karlaftis getting re-signed, that really only leaves Trent McDuffie out there right now that could potentially get an extension. Do you anticipate Brett Veach working any more magic to try to get something done?
I think it's going to be really hard. It is, they're in this weird spot between, yes, Derek Stingley just got paid. Pat Surtain has not got paid yet. Probably not going to make Pat Surtain money just because he's a defensive player of the year, best corner in the league by far.
I don't know.
But it is close. It is very, very close, but it's just kind of hard to figure out.
He'll make Sauce Gardner money.
He's going to make Sauce Gardner money, and that's where the difficulty lies. Do you kind of – it's like, does Brett Veach have any more Veach magic? Like, no, he needs some of that Howie Roseman magic, whereas, like, they just kind of pay everybody and figure it out and just say whatever. And so – I don't know that. Like, that's my best guesstimation, is that I'm glad they're getting deals done sooner rather than later. It's just that they've got to get this one done before Pat Surtain, because the number's only going to increase. And then you're in a situation like Dallas is inevitably with every good player of theirs.
Yeah. Speaking of Dallas, Jerry's going to talk always. For some reason, he's going to throw players he's negotiating with under the bus for no reason. Mm-hmm. But he does that with Micah Parsons. Micah Parsons doesn't like it. Of course, Micah Parsons doesn't like it. We just saw J.J. Watt get paid what he got paid.
T.J. Watt.
See Trey Hendrickson leave Cincinnati without his deal. I think we might be getting to the point. I said this yesterday. I think we might be getting to the point where these edge rushers are being overpaid. I don't know that it's worth it. Like, J.J. Watt and or Miles Garrett are not – what's that?
T.J. Watt.
T.J. Watt. T.J. Watt and Miles Garrett are not going to help their respective team. They're not going to win a Super Bowl with their teams. They'll not – they're neither of those guys are winning a Super Bowl playing for the teams they're playing for during these contracts. If the Cowboys re-sign Micah Parsons, it's not going to mean they win a – like, I think the position is critical, but it's not quarterback. Like, what are we doing with some of these guys? I would trade them. And that's, again, to the Karlaftis deal now looks great. It looks brilliant because it's way under what these guys are making.
I think particularly with George Karlaftis, and we can revert back to this conversation, it has more similarities to do with, like, Garrett Wilson's deal than, like, any of his edge rushers, because there's and Garrett Wilson, for as good as he is, and it's probably because he's in New York, he gets a little bit more accolades or hype or whatever it is. He's probably between the 15th and 20th best receiver in the league, but he's getting $120 million because that's the price of doing business with a receiver like that. Similarly, George Karlaftis gets $93 million because there's about 30-ish DNs. Like, Josh Sweat got a deal with the Cardinals after his performance, mostly in the Super Bowl and the postseason this year. There's about 30 to 35 defensive ends that can do what George Karlaftis does. There isn't a guy like Micah Parsons. There isn't a guy like Miles Sanders. There isn't a guy like T.J. Watt. Those are that's where, like, sure, your quarterback is incredibly important, and it's incredibly important to what you do. And sure, Dak Prescott is going to get paid a lot of money to do what he does, but he's not Patrick Mahomes. And so I think that's where there's always going to be a separation between the top three to five guys in the league at any position, and that's where you see a Micah Parsons, a Miles Garrett, a T.J. Watt, and it's just up to Jerry Jones just isn't in the business of winning Super Bowls, because he's in the business of headlines and doing whatever. And so that's where you kind of get caught in that situation. But Micah Parsons is a critical part to winning a Super Bowl if you're the Dallas Cowboys at this current situation, because he is on your roster and he's one of the, I don't know, 10 best players in the football.
You mentioned Garrett. You mentioned Watt. You mentioned Parsons. Is Trey Hendrickson in that range as well? I mean, it sounds like there's still a pretty large disconnect between – him and the Bengals over guaranteed money. He went home. He's not a part of training camp right now for the Bengals. I'm a little bit surprised that after the optimism of their owner yesterday, that they still don't have anything done.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about two of the strangest owner GM, like, and the only two owners that are GMs anymore, and Mike Brown and Jerry Jones. And so it is incredibly frustrating. And I think Trey Hendrickson probably falls closer to the George Karloftis end of things, where he's like incredibly important, but it's more that he's important to this team. And obviously he's set sack numbers and doing impressive things, but he isn't Micah Parsons. He isn't Myles Garrett. He isn't these guys. He's close. He's better than George Karloftis, so he should bridge the gap between those guys and probably get a number more similarly to Garrett Wilson. But where's the money coming from, guys? Because you just gave Jamar Chase money. You just gave T. Higgins money. We all know you don't like spending the money, and you just paid Joe Burrow however long ago you did that. So they just don't they don't know where the money's coming from. And it's they've already gone against what they do anyway. Trey Hendrickson is just bad timing for him mostly, but they have to get the deal done if they want to be competitive, especially in that division.
Well, that's the pressure there, and that's I think the difference with him, because that's a team that you think okay, they could win he could help them win a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Joe Burrow. They've got Jamar Chase. They've got all these people. They just have a terrible defense.
Yeah.
He's almost been twice as productive as George Karloftis since Karloftis.
The thing is, he was on that bad defense last year, setting the sack record or led the league in sacks last year. Your point earlier is like, are these guys helping you win Super Bowls? Sure, kinda. Like, you can have great numbers, but at the same time, the defense was still bad because the secondary couldn't figure it out.
So trade him. Just trade him. Trade him and try to
get him. They might be in that situation because of all of the other things that they've already done. Whereas the Cowboys, they have done other things, but it only makes sense to pay Micah Parsons because he is a top five guy in the league at his position.
I don't think it makes sense to pay him. You paid Dak. You paid CD. If you're the Bengals, you paid Burrow.
You paid receivers. If you're Kansas City, you pay Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Chris Jones.
But Karloftis isn't getting the deal these guys are getting. Karloftis falls right outside the
top. He's not as good as these guys. He's not as good as Micah Parsons.
And I agree. That's why I think his deal makes more sense. Like, I'll tell you this. I'd rather. What is his deal? I mean, I would rather spend the money they spent on him, even though he is really, not.
In the case of in the NFL, it's really hard to say you drafted a guy in the first round. He was a first team all pro for you and almost defensive player of the year in the top three voting for you in the first 4 years of his career and to not give him the deal. Like, he is like whatever the position is, whether it's offensive line, outside linebacker, whatever it is, it's really hard to say, yeah, you drafted this guy. He is a hometown player. He is and especially for Micah Parsons, he loves being a Dallas Cowboy. And so, like, I think there is a bit.
Does he?
Of that, as much as we think it's strange, he likes being a Dallas Cowboy. He's always showing up to stuff in the Star, and so like it is. You kind of have to pay Micah Parsons because he is that guy.
Would you rather pay? How old is Parsons? 24-ish.
Mm-hmm.
That's how old Carla. Would you rather pay Karloftis $22 million a year or Parsons $45 million a year?
Parsons $45 million a year.
That's crazy to me.
No, the thing. That's how big of the difference is.
But get two George Karloftises.
There aren't. You can't get two George Karloftises. You can't because you have to draft a Trent McDuffie. You have to do other things with your team. You have to pay Patrick Mahomes.
Okay, let's do it. Trent McDuffie's too expensive for this example, probably. But would you rather have Parsons or Karloftis and McDuffie?
No comment. No comment, because it's not a deal I would make, like, just straight up those two guys for one. But if you're in that situation, would you rather have a top three? And like, Trent McDuffie is a top five player at his position. Micah Parsons is a top three, so you're kind of splitting hairs. But I mean, yeah, I guess I'd rather have two players of those. Top 30 player, as opposed to just one top three player.
I just think that position's getting overvalued a little bit. As far as not that the players aren't awesome and impactful, just as far as like being realistic with your salary cap.
Right. And we'll see, and we can get into the nitty gritty. I mean, honestly, I'd highly encourage this shameless plug here. Listen to the Let's Talk Ball podcast, especially that Defensive Trends podcast, because we talk a lot about how the cover three has returned back to the league and these hybrid players like a Micah Parsons has become more and more important. And a hybrid player like a Derwin James, a Trent McDuffie, you can play inside and out, slot corners. And so it Micah Parsons, because he is a hybrid and he is probably the best at being a hybrid, he is worth most of every dollar, and he's going to get more if Jerry Jones keeps waiting.
He's awesome. I love Micah Parsons. Mm-hmm. Don't misunderstand.
This is all Jerry's fault.
It is Jerry's fault. Yeah, he should have done this early. He should have done what the Chiefs just did with Karlaftis, and mm-hmm. he should have jumped out ahead of it a little bit, and maybe he could have got him for $20 million less a year if he would just get out of his own way.
Do his job. Just do your job, Jerry.
Just don't talk about it. Be about it. All right, Felix, what do you guys have working for us this week?
We'll be having a podcast coming out tomorrow. Let's Talk Ball once again. An episode, I think we're talking about the NFC East. Next week, we'll be talking about the AFC West, like I mentioned earlier, with Nate Taylor, now of ESPN. Had a great time with him. We're talking George Karlaftis' extension. We'll have that clip coming out this week. So at Let's Talk Ball, or at Talk Ball Podcast on X, at Felix R. Johnson on X. Let's Talk Ball Podcast. That's where you can get most of my good stuff. So, yeah.
There it is. We'll continue to dig in. We'll dig into the Chiefs more and more as the weeks come and training camp rolls on. Felix, appreciate it.
Appreciate you, gentlemen.
There goes Felix Johnson. It's always these edge rushers and these wide receivers, Tommy. We don't see a lot of, you know, linebacker holdouts, do we? Quarterbacks are obviously in there too. But like, where are our I don't know, tight end holdouts. Like it's always the same position.
Yeah, it's the guys that are getting after the quarterback that are going to hold out. Whether you're on the edge or you're a linebacker or you're a defensive lineman, if you get after the quarterback, you're the position that's most likely to hold out, I would imagine. I mean, Chris Jones did that a couple of years ago for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I get it with some of these edge rushers, Tommy, I do. But man, when you're trying to navigate and negotiate the cap, I just think there's a difference in having Micah Parsons versus George Karlaftis and Joe Burrow versus I'm trying to think of a good example of a really good quarterback, but one that you don't, you know, middle of the road quarterback. I don't know what would
like
be
a,
the comparison?
Like a Brock Purdy or
sure. Brock Purdy who got it kind of a middle of the road contract.
Yeah.
There's a big difference there in what, you know, the quarterback you have to have the quarterback to win an NFL championship. There is no debate about that, right? And the discrepancy of quarterback pay tells you that, right? How much they get paid. To think of defensive end the same way or edge rusher, to me, it just doesn't make any sense. You can win Super Bowls without a great edge rusher. Go look at the highest paid guys right now. You've got to go down to find one that's been on a Super Bowl champion recently. I don't know. Like, they're not even in the top 20 here. Who's the Eagles' highest paid edge rusher, right? Like, it doesn't translate to me to do it that way. To pay that premium for that position does not translate to Super Bowls to me. So if I'm allocating resources, and you're paying a quarterback, you've got to find other ways to put it together. And that the Chiefs have done a really good job at this. They have. But man, I don't see it with some of these contracts being given out and demanded by edge rushers.
I think that the main player right now that it does make sense to try to pay would be Trey Hendrickson. And that's only because
I agree.
He's the only halfway competent defensive player that they have on that roster. And they've got an offense that we've seen over the years be very, very successful. Now, it's not just Trey Hendrickson. They're going to have to go and get help in the secondary. And I know that they've tried to do some things to make that better this year. Time will tell if it actually will work for the Bengals or not. But they have a new defensive coordinator, all of that. You need to have your anchor defensively, and your anchor has been Trey Hendrickson. And so I would pay him. But if you compare that to the Cowboys and you compare that to Micah Parsons, it's been, by and large, the same roster for the Cowboys for the last couple of years. It's been
and
Dak.
The Bengals.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that for the Bengals, at least you know you have a highly talented offense that is already in place. The Cowboys, we don't know that yet. Like, we know who Dak Prescott is. We know that he is fine. He's not Joe Burrow. We know that he's fine. They've got CeeDee Lamb. We'll see if George Pickens can help them, whatever. But, I mean, I think anybody would take the Bengals offense over the Cowboys offense right now for sure. So I would be more inclined to pay Trey Hendrickson, knowing that at least historically he's been at least the one constant in our defense and the one guy that has been highly productive defensively for us, than giving a bunch of money to Micah Parsons when you already know that this current iteration of the Cowboys – with Micah Parsons already on the defense and Dak Prescott getting paid, is not going to win you a Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, look, it's probably no coincidence that these are the two highest paid quarterbacks right now, Dak Prescott and Joe Burrow, in the NFL. I think you just, like, it really comes down to, does Hendrickson put you over the edge? Does Parsons put you over the edge? You could switch the players and their teams. It's that you think, to me, it's that you think Joe Burrow has a puncher's chance to win a Super Bowl if you can just get him into the postseason, and having a big edge rusher is a big part of that, right? They can be game disruptors. We know that. You trust him more than you trust Dak in the postseason. So that's what it comes down to. But again, we're having the conversation about the defensive ends when it's still really a conversation about quarterbacks. And like, I don't understand why paying TJ Watt $41 million a year or Myles Garrett $40 million a year seemed like a good decision for those respective franchises.
I agree with you on that. I mean, I think that with the Myles Garrett move, the Browns would have been so much better served to take that money and spread it out elsewhere to try to rebuild their franchise.
Just trade the player and
get a ton of picks. Yeah, like I think that's totally reasonable. And so like, I don't like that signing. Kind of the same thing with TJ Watt. Like, he's a dynamic player, there's no doubt about that, but is TJ Watt single-handedly going to make you win a championship? No. But again, I go back to Trey Hendrickson. I would sign him knowing that the cupboard is pretty bare defensively for the Bengals. I would give him the money that he wants, because I think that he may be slightly less effective than those top three guys.
Yeah, people say that, but I don't even know that that's true. The numbers don't bear that out.
He may be like fourth. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he might be right behind those top three. I think the Bengals need him more to win a championship than these other teams need those other guys.
There's no question. And the Cowboys need Parsons too. And the Cowboys feel probably like the Bengals that they could. It certainly Jerry Jones does. Whether he's right or he's wrong, he feels like, which is why this shouldn't have gotten to this point for either franchise in the first place. They should have been out ahead of both of these contracts so they don't have to reset the market. There's a big difference in resetting the market when it's at, you know, $30 million, $35 million, that now at probably $45 million. Max Crosby's another one getting big money like this. Ain't going to win it. Nick Bosa is probably the example of the team that's committed to the position that has the best chance. The Vikings are doing it with a couple of guys. The Bills, maybe the Bills, Greg Rousseau's making $20 million. You know, like, there's a huge difference in what these new contracts are versus what the rest of the guys, like, if, you know, it's why the Dak Prescott contract was so stupid to me at $60 million a year. Like, what? I don't know. I mean, they're all stupid on the quarterback end when you look at the list, because Trevor Lawrence right now is the fifth highest paid quarterback in football.
Yeah.
So I understand it with quarterback. There is a 0% chance you can do it with a bad quarterback. And there's, you have a just fine chance if you have a great quarterback and a bad pass rusher. Like, you know, because that's just the way this league is. So I don't know. These debates, like, I get where I don't get why Jerry Jones feels the need to go out there and publicly talk about it all the time and throw his guys under the bus. But I do get the resistance to pay these guys what they're probably demanding in these contracts, because if you look at it, I just don't think it bears out to be worth it. Like, if I have a star quarterback, I'm making sure the star quarterback is paid. My second priority would be protecting the star quarterback through offensive linemen, and then I'd go from there. That's what I would do if I was a GM and I had to lay out the blueprint of here's how I want to build this franchise. I want my star quarterback. I'm going to pay them. I want to make sure they're protected. I'm going to pay them. And then we're going to have to be a really good team at drafting, right? Brett Veach has the benefit that Patrick Mahomes is very flexible with his contract. Other guys have done that over the years. I assume guys, you know, Burrow probably will do that at some point too. But the Chiefs have been very good for the most part at identifying their guys and getting out ahead of their deals. They just don't have a lot of the highest paid XYZ. Kelsey's also been of great benefit for Brett Veach. Those two guys have been, I mean, that's a bonus most GMs don't have. They did it with Chris Jones. Chris Jones is a less expensive player than some of these other guys. So I think they do a good job of it. And that's a part of what makes him so good at what he does.
I mean, Trey Smith, they made him the highest paid, you know, guy, the highest paid guard.
But that one raised our eyebrows. But it's at a position where the highest paid guy is making half of what TJ Watt's making, basically.
Yeah. I think that, again, knowing the drama that is out there with the top edge rushers in the league, whether we're talking about Micah Parsons or Trey Hendrickson, just that drama by itself makes the George Karlaftis signing you feel that much better about. Because while he's not in the top 10, he's right outside the top 10, but at least you've got him locked in. He's a good player. You're not resetting the market with him, and there's no drama. He just reports to camp. You've got him paid. You've got him locked up, and you know you have an edge rusher for a long time to come. That has been really good for you. And you avoid all of the drama. And I think that going back to what happened a couple of years ago with Chris Jones and his holdout and everything, Brett Veach, I think, wants to do everything in his power to avoid something like that happening again, especially how it rolled over into the regular season and all of that. You know, that was a talking point and a narrative that I don't think he, you know, necessarily wants to repeat anytime soon. So, you know, getting Karlaftis locked up in the way that he did, in the manner in which he did it, the amount of money that they're paying him and all of that, and then you contrast that to the drama with the Cowboys and the Bengals right now, it just makes that contract seem that much better.
So here's another thing on this. When you look at what I'm trying to get to with this is, what does Chris Jones makes about $10 million more a year than the guys, you know, that are like the 10th highest. These contracts they're given to these edge rushers, TJ Watt, Myles Garrett, they're about 20 or more million than what their peers that are other top 10 players are making. So the comparables are there. Trey Smith is a little interesting. Trey Smith makes a lot of money compared to his peers in that top 10. So his contract will be one to watch and whether that has the ultimate value. But the difference in edge rusher payments versus what good teams are paying them and what the top guys are making on not the elite teams is, to me, it's staggering. And I wouldn't do it if I were these teams. I just wouldn't do it. The Bengals are the outlier, because I do think they could win a Super Bowl if they can get Burrow into the playoffs, even with their terrible defense. I don't think the Cowboys can, although they probably feel that way about themselves. So these negotiations will be fascinating. How much pressure do they feel? I think the savvy decision is to trade the players. I do. I don't think either of them are going to get traded. They'll probably both get paid.
I bet they will. I mean, Jerry Jones is going to throw them under the bus, but then he's going to write a check. That's yeah. What's going to end up happening.
I mean, it always does. It always does. Whatever. whatever. All right, that'll do it for us. Don't forget Royals baseball right here on KFH tonight, 7 o'clock. Royals in Chicago taking on those Cubbies. Rich Hill, the old man, can he get it done? You can tune in to 97.5 and 1240 KFH for the game. Of course, you can always listen to KFHradio.com or free on the Odyssey app. Just search KFH.
It's a busy night. We've got that going on. TBT tonight. The Aftershocks back in action. Get out to Coke Arena. Go support these guys.
And Bucks.
They've got an opportunity to make a run here and should be really excited.
And some things have happened elsewhere that could bring the tournament through Wichita. There is a world where that could happen. Congrats to the Jayhawks, the 1-9 team. They're exciting. We'll recap it all tomorrow. From Action Tommy, thanks to Felix Johnson. I'm Jacob. We'll see you.